Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, piedmontmedicalcenter.com. And our thanks to highspeedweb.net for streaming our signal 24/7, 365. York County Council member Christy Cox is back with us today, and we have a potpourri of different things to get through today. She's looking at me like, I'm not sure I want to be here today.
I never know what's going to come out of your mouth.
Well, you see, here's my list of prepared questions, which is what scares you. You know, I learned a long time ago from my father, who was also an attorney. He said, Manning, a lawyer never goes into the courtroom, never addresses a witness until he knows the answer to the question that he's going to ask. Is that true?
That is true, but we're in politics, and that's a totally different world.
That's exactly right. So, Christy, tell everybody your district is?
District 5, ranges from McConnell's to Oakdale, Mount Holly, Leslie, Catawba, all the way to Fort Mill, basically south of 160 east of Banks Road.
So you got a little bit of everything.
I do.
You got rural, you got urban, you got the whole thing.
I basically describe District 5 as a microcosm of the entire county. We got a little bit of everything.
You know, I've asked this question, and I didn't tee you up on this, but it just popped in my head. Oh, gosh, she says, here we go. I've asked some of the other council members that I wonder, with this tremendous growth that we've had here in York County and how we're getting more urbanized in certain centers, whether we need to relook during 2020, which is a census year, of maybe having some type of at-large representative on the council, whether it be, I don't know, however you reform the districts, or whether it be the council chairperson or whatever. Do you think that makes any sense?
Well, redistricting is definitely already going to happen. I do think that one of the things that has always bothered me is that the majority of the folks actually live in the unincorporated areas, but the representation on the council doesn't necessarily lend itself that way. So I think whatever we do and however we look at that, this, which I do think there needs to be some changes, and there will be some changes given the population changes, but we need to be mindful of the fact that we need to make sure that the unincorporated area is given a voice.
Well, the whole business of redistricting is a nightmare in itself. You got the demographers who say this is how it should be, and then we go back and forth between the counties and the state, and somebody waves and passes grace on this. I guess it's the General Assembly, and then you've got your districts.
That's right.
All right. Okay, let's talk about York County. I've asked Christy, watch out now. She's rolling up her sleeves. She's getting ready to go now. Give me a state of the state as to where the county is right now.
The county is doing great. We just hired a new county manager, which I'm very excited about. But in terms of financial condition, we have a AAA tax rating, which is probably the best grade you can get in terms of a report card. It shows how the county is handling money. We have healthy reserves, and we have good interest rates, which actually help buoy the municipalities that we have. Our referendum projects, the voters approved $89 million of bond referendum projects in November 2015. That was recycling center, family court, Moss Justice, and the admin building. All of those things are completed or about to be completed. We actually have the family court building that's going to be officially opened right now on March 16th, and those all came in within budget. Council is also on pace to pay the GO debt off much earlier than expected by 2024, which will save the taxpayers $9 million in interest. And I also learned today, we're just now embarking into the budget cycle, and as we approach that, the value of the mill, we guess, and we don't know this exactly yet, will raise approximately 4%, and it's my understanding that we're going to have presented to us a balanced budget with no tax increase. So that's exciting news.
So when the value of the mill goes up, just by the value of everybody's property, when you get to the actual budget, you have a couple of options. You can, what do they call it, the constant yield rate or something, where revenue-wise you're not allowed to go up more than 1% without having a public hearing that you're going to raise taxes. Is that right? Something like that.
There are limitations as to how much you can raise taxes to make sure that it doesn't oppose it.
So even though the mill is going to be going up, do you expect that you will make the adjustments so that everybody's tax bill will be basically the same?
I think what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to take a look and see what, how everything shakes out, because not the majority of the, our tax revenue is simply from the property tax yield. So we've got to take a look at everything, and I think we're going to get started on that that process very soon. And typically we have public hearings sometime in May before we approve the budget.
And I know one thing that the county prides itself in is the fact that, you know, you kind of benchmark yourself against other counties across the state. And for a county this size with this many people, the numbers of employees that you all have, I think, way below what the average would be for any other county this size.
We're a lean, mean machine, and I think it speaks volumes to all the different things we have going on. In fact, even with our Economic Development Department, we just heard from them that our unemployment rate is down to 2.4%, and we are producing jobs like gangbusters. From July of last year until now, we have 7 new announced or completed projects with 306 new jobs, $302 million worth of investment. I mean, York County, we are so blessed. And that's the one thing. When we start talking about some of these other issues that I'm sure you're going to get to, we need to keep in mind the fact that what is happening in York County is great, and we are truly blessed, and we have a lot of good things going for us. We have problems that the rest of the state and other counties are just envious of.
Yeah, wish they had.
Right.
Wish they had these kinds of problems. Okay. So with all this growth and the 2.4%, I think whoever it was down in Washington announced our unemployment rate, I mean, the country's is about a point higher than that. So we're well below whatever the national average is. Of course, we could get into a whole great big discussion right now about workforce development, which, of course, is one of the big challenges of anybody in economic development. Do you have enough workers for the new industries coming in? But according to David Swenson, we got them. We got them. We got a pool there. All right, so we're in good
and
shape.
To that point, I don't mean to interrupt you, but to that point, I recently went to the York Tech annual meeting, and they showed us their new facility, which they paid for with their existing budget. They didn't ask the county and they didn't go out and ask for additional money to build their new student center. It's great. It's phenomenal. What's happening over there is wonderful, and I'm glad that they're a partner of ours when it comes to economic development. We really need to be proud of that.
Well, hand in hand with economic development is this whole thing called quality of life, and the county is obviously responding to that. You're doing some big work out at Ebenezer Park with the expansion out there, and we've got called Riverbend, 2,000 acres sitting out there just waiting for the county to be able to use it. I know there's a long process and you're going through it. I had David Hudsmith on here the other day, and he was talking to me that's part of what your budgeting plan is for this year, is to figure out what those first initial steps will be out there. But that's going to be a long-term project.
I'm very proud of that 1,900 acres. To see our council pull together for that, we did that without increasing taxes, using an existing revenue stream to pay for that, and it's going to be paid for within 15 to 20 years. And we are now in the process of looking at one-year plans, five-year plans, and 20-year plans as to what we're going to do with that. And being able to open it to the public, that's going to be – it's a big deal, and it's exciting, and very proud of that.
I always remember the aerial view of both sides of the Catawba River. On the Fort Mill side, rooftops, 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 rooftops. On the Rock Hill side, you had this big, beautiful 2,000 acres sitting out there. And the question was, do you want that to become like what's over in Fort Mill? And the answer was no. If we don't get it now, we're not going to get it.
Absolutely.
And you, the way you pulled that deal off was masterful. Straw man, I mean, however you did, that was just absolutely great.
It really was, and we got an extremely good deal for the community. And not only does it help us with attracting high-quality economic development, it gives our citizens something for the money that they're paying for in H-Tax, and allows other folks that come in and enjoy our county to be paying for this amenity, and to be able to do that without raising taxes again. That's just huge.
All right. So now you've got a brand new county manager. You referred to that. You went through a rather laborious process to make that selection, but you had an interim in place who happens to be the actual county manager. But you know, David Hudsmith, obviously, I mean, he's got a long track record of serving different areas right here in York County. So there really wasn't a question of a learning curve for him. taking this job that you offered him.
That's true. I think we did take it very seriously, though. We hired a consultant who brought us at least 9 individuals who were highly qualified to be considered for the job. We interviewed them twice. We presented them to the public. We let all of you get a crack at them and talk to them. And after doing all that, by far, David Hudspeth was the best choice. I mean, we have someone who's homegrown, who's here we can trust, who's invested here, who's going to stay here. And having that person in the right place and someone who went to York Tech and who went to Winthrop and who has been in Fort Mill working and who has worked in Rock Hill as well, is to have that broad experience and to have him here, we're very lucky to have him.
One question I asked the other council members when they came on before the final selection was made was, are you looking for somebody who not only has all these skill set, but somebody who will be able to stand, I don't want to say you stand up, will be able to say to you, council members, that is not the right direction to go. You need to look at this, boom, 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 and have the council respect that viewpoint, rather than being a yes person.
Absolutely, and I think David does that, and he does that in a tactful way. Nobody likes to be told no or to be told that your opinion is wrong, but I think that what he does is he brings a temperament to the table that suits our council well, and he carries a lot of rapport with the other municipalities, and so I see us moving in good directions.
Good. So let's talk about two issues which have dominated your life in 2019. You thought they'd be gone by then, but here we are in 2020. Let's take on the issue about the TIF. I think everybody understands the history of this. The city has come back to the county council again and said, look, we need to modify this downtown TIF primarily because of $500 million in construction that's popped up out of nowhere. And for them to provide the infrastructure that they need for those developed private sector developments, they need to have more ability to borrow against this TIF. So where are we on this thing?
Well, we've actually had 2 readings on a county proposal to present to the city, and we have 3rd reading, which is set for March 16th. Basically, what the city has asked for is to increase the debt limit. They have insisted that they do not want to extend the deadline for the TIF to be paid off, which is a good thing. And I think this plan is a good one to the extent that it allows controls to be put in place to make sure that the taxpayers are protected. Just to give a little bit of background, TIFs are there to help redevelop and revitalize blighted areas. And the idea is you don't get a tax reduction. You basically use the increase in the value of the property, use that tax money that would normally go to the school districts, to the city, to the county to pay for general fund expenses. You divert that money to pay off these public infrastructure projects that will in turn hopefully increase private investment.
Water, so, sewer, streets, lights, that kind of
right,
stuff.
Right. You cannot use public money to improve private property, and that's really important. The issues here that we have that are a little bit of a struggle. I was on council 5 years ago when the last extension, or what we told was the last extension, was going to be here, and we were told that there's no more, we'll be done. So to have it come back, I think it's extremely important, and I'm glad that the county went forward and did an audit. But TIFs typically, through that audit process, TIFs typically last between 10 and 20 years. We're talking about a 50-year TIF. So we need to take a look at what's going on here, and let's figure out a way to make sure that we don't extend it any further than 2039. We also need, and one of my biggest concerns, we need to make sure that the additional money that's going to be borrowed, that it can reasonably be paid off by 2039. Just to give you some details, and I think we need to drill down on facts here. I hear a lot of political talking, but the facts are pretty clear. Over the past 30 years, the city issued a total debt of about $50.5 million for projects in the combined TIF area. So basically, that was $50.5 million in actual projects that were done. The debt's been refunded 5 times, and it's racked up significant interest and fees. After 30 years, the city still owes almost $46 million on the principal on that debt. So we've paid more in bank fees than we have on the debt. We've collected $14.25 million between the school, the county, and the city. And of that amount, $7.6 million has been paid to interest. We have to pay $1.2 million on the cost of the issuance of the debt. We have $230,000 in underwriter and discount fees. We have capitalized interest, which is basically interest on interest of $300,000. So I think it's important that if you look at how much has been spent, are we doing it wisely? And so that would be the criticism that I have, is that we've got to make sure that what the investment is it makes sense for the taxpayers.
Well, as I understand this thing, as we just referenced, we've got, it's pretty, I mean, everybody understands that the development's going on in downtown. It's quite a bit. It's quite extensive. I don't think anybody in their wildest imagination would have guessed 10 years ago that we were going to be having all this kind of growth, but here it is. And the projects that are on the boards to be done are going to require things like parking decks and what have you, which will be paid for out of the TIF money. And if there's not enough TIF money there to build the parking decks, let's say, then do you run the risk of a project not going forward because the city can't provide the infrastructure that it needs for the project?
Well, here's the thing. Downtown is great. I love going down there. I love going to Whitehorse. It is phenomenal what's happening down there. I fully support it. The bigger question is it being funded appropriately? There are other ways to fund this. Use different tax revenues, use different revenue streams to pay for this, and figure out a way to where we're not giving away so much in interest and fees that it's counterbalancing what we're trying to achieve here. When you look at it from the perspective that the school district has incrementally given about $8.2 million given through the TIF, that's about what all of that money has gone to interest and fees of what I've just shared with you. So I think the key point here is that we've got to figure out the best way to make this happen. I think that as I understand it, the proposal that has been made and that we have third reading on March 16th, it is giving the city what they want in terms of identifying the projects and the amount of money that's needed to do the additional infrastructure projects, and it has the controls in place that will make sure that our schools aren't financing development, that we're actually making progress, and that we're making a dent in the debt and that we can actually pay that off.
To your knowledge, has the city signed off on this final version that's going to be coming up on March the 16th, or is it still a question of differences there?
I think I would like to have some assurance that this agreement, as it works out and what is reasonably projected, that it will actually be able to be paid off at 2039, which is the intent of all the parties. And again, you know, just to put some of this in perspective, the county purchased the 1,900 acres for $20 million without raising taxes. We're going to pay that off in 15 to 20 years and with less interest than what this project has done in 30 years. So I do think that there are ways for us to learn from one another to make sure that what we're doing is making progress and that we're working together towards making the best investment for the taxpayers.
And I'm sure, I mean, the city obviously has the option not to, I mean, if whatever the language is in your proposal that's being coming up for third reading, if the city doesn't like it, they can just say, okay, we'll just exist with what we have and we'll figure it out with the existing TIF.
I'm sure that's their option. I don't understand how that would, if this provides controls and gives them the additional funding they want, I'm not sure why they would do that, but they certainly don't have to accept the agreement.
Because the existing TIF, as I understand it, goes to 2039. There's no extension at all on the length of the term, because I know that's something that you don't want, and they never said they did want. They would pay it off. So, okay. All right. All right. With that being said, is there anything else about the TIF except it comes up on the 16th of March?
No, I would just like to point out, and I've heard some folks who had asked me, why did you do an audit? What's the purpose of that? And I do want to make sure that your listeners understand that this issue was brought to us about 2 months ago. And so in order to meet deadlines and to push this forward, we hired an auditor to come in and take a look at that. As I understand it, the city had already been negotiating with the school district far beyond that, maybe a year before it came to us. And so I do think that the county has worked very hard to meet their deadlines and to come up with a proposal that suits what they need.
And I do think we also need to restate the fact that the auditor didn't find any misappropriation of dollars, that everything was done according to but he just had recommendations as to how he thought it could be done better.
And the auditor didn't do a forensic audit, but they did not. You're correct in that what it was intended to do was to identify areas where we need to improve, which includes not refunding the debt, which is one of the biggest things that needs to be included in this this revised version.
Okay. We're going to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, now we're all here together at Substation 2. The weekend is here. We're going to be enjoying fresh subs and salads 7 days a week. Scott Oliver has come to lead us in the chant. Christy Cox is looking over here. She knows what she has to do. How do we do it? At the count of three, everybody. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
I love their fresh meats and the sweet wheat bread.
The bread, their quality meats, and their prices.
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Now available from Founders Federal Credit Union, Dividend AMP. Dividend AMP is the easiest way to fund Founders Loyalty Select, our highest yield savings account. Enroll in Dividend AMP today, and the dividends from your eligible interest-bearing accounts may qualify for Dividend AMP transfers. Log into Founders Online to enroll today. Relax, we're helping you amp up your savings. Account restrictions apply, federally insured by NCUA.
Gold Hill Emergency Department is now open. This is Michelle Walk, ED Director at Piedmont Medical Center. Gold Hill ED is Fort Mill's first standalone emergency room, open 24/7, 365, offering all the services of a hospital-based emergency room with 12 treatment areas. Whatever the medical issue, our team of emergency medical professionals is ready to treat your family, well, when it matters most. Stop by the ED at Gold Hill Road and pick up a free first aid kit. Visit goldhiller.com to learn more.
These days, everybody wants peace of mind. Some people do yoga. Some meditate. Me? I use Ready Home Security from Comporium. Ready Home lets me monitor my house, even when I'm hundreds of miles away. With Ready Home, I can use my phone or tablet to set my alarm, turn on lights, lock the doors, even control my thermostat. Yoga's great, but knowing that everything's great at home, now that's peace of mind. That's Ready Home. To learn more about Ready Home, visit Comporium.com or call 888-403-2667.
Good Pharmacy, with a modern look and traditional standards.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. All six of our pharmacists love serving you and your children. Ask us about alternatives for your child's medicine.
My mommy loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
Such distinguished people frequent this place. Enjoy that, and the food is delicious.
The salads are the best in town.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Christy Cox is with us. She is a member of the York County Council, District Number 5. And we're talking about a potpourri of different things. Of course, she did not want to miss the opportunity to talk with me about the Carolina Panthers. Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, is it fair to say that what Mayor Geddes said to me one day, this whole issue with the Panthers, which started just a little over a year ago, it has been nonstop for over a year, and as he said, it's pretty much exhausted everybody. It's consumed a lot of time, correct?
It has. It has taken a lot of time. I think we started, at least the county began to get involved and was aware of this sometime back in August.
All right, so there's been back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and this is just a huge project. I mean, we're talking about potentially a project that could be $1 billion or more. Stack that up against all the economic development we've had in York County, and the numbers are just phenomenal. Okay, so the ball, as I understand it, is pretty much in York County's court, and everybody's been waiting for the council to put an ordinance out there.
Actually, that's not exactly true. I mean, it's a complex deal. There are a lot of moving parts. There are intergovernmental agreements, FILO agreements, bonding agreements, development agreements. There are also issues that the Panthers had to work out through the state. So they've not been waiting on us at all. And we have our management team has a great relationship with the Panther management team, and I expect that they're going to have the information available for the public to look at. One of the things that I do, but I want to make clear that the delays have not been caused by anything at the county, and I think that we're going to be moving forward fairly quickly. So hot off the press, Manning, you actually get some information. I just came over the email.
You mean to tell me everything else you told me was not good information?
This is, it just came out via email. We're going to, as I understand it, unless something changes, there will be first reading on the Panther deal March 11th at 6 p.m. That's scheduled to be at the York Council Chambers. Second reading will be March 16th, which is at our regular council meeting at 6 p.m. at Council Chambers as well. That will be the public hearing. So anyone who wants to be heard on that, anyone who wants to speak, that would be the time for you to come out and do that. And right now, as I understand it, third reading is scheduled for March 30th at Council Chambers as well. So there you go. That's what you've been asking for. That's what you've been wanting.
Thank you. Now, I'll be the first to admit this is a huge, huge, complicated, and you're absolutely right. There's so many moving parts to this thing. It's incredible. So my understanding is that this thing really started to get closer to finality when you were able, however you did it, to hook up your assistant county manager, Kevin Madden, with his counterpart with inside the Panthers. And those guys, without the layers in between them, were able to understand each other and where they were going and get this to where it is now.
Absolutely. I think Kevin's involvement and being involved in the project is extremely important, and I think has helped us develop a closer relationship to understand what needs to happen. I understand it's a good relationship. I'm looking forward to seeing what the documents actually are, but I do think his involvement and getting him involved has created what I understand a much better deal than what was originally presented.
Yeah. Nobody would say anything except we'd love to have the Panthers here. I mean, that's universally accepted. The question is, how do we, as you do with every industry, how do we provide a payment system for the infrastructure that's going to have to be put out there? And that's what's taken so long, as I understand it, to put together.
Exactly. And I think there's some confusion and some folks who don't understand how different incentive packages work. I know that there's been some discussion about this is just like a TIF. This is a TIF. This is not a TIF. It wouldn't even qualify for a TIF. A TIF is for blighted areas and redevelopment. This is vacant land. This is a brand new project. It wouldn't qualify for TIF money unless you included some larger parcel. So what we're dealing with in terms of a local level are the FILO incentives. The Panthers have been negotiating at the state level to get the state incentives, and at the local level, what potentially can be done is property taxes. So if you invest at least $150 million, the state has put in place the fact that you can reduce your tax rate to 4%, which is basically what you and I pay. Yeah. It's not basically, it is what you and I pay on our homes. It's the lowest tax rate that exists. The question is going to be, how much money is it that the Panthers are going to actually put down on paper as to what they're willing to invest, and does that justify further reduction in the tax rate?
And we'll find all about that coming up on March the 11th. Christy Cox, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You're going to come back, aren't you?
Absolutely.
All right, good. Christy Cox, our member from the York County Council, District Number 5, our guest today on our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. One last time. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. Christy, tell them how it's done at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Well done, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. I mean, Monday. No, whatever. Somebody will be here. Bye.